जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद सो कंटिन्यूइंग आवर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्री चैतन्य चरितमृत Chapter 13, The Lord's Dancing at Rath Yatra. I believe we're on text number 122. Correct? That's he finished 120. So we're on 121. Start on 120? Okay. So I believe we're just reading the verses just to expedite the reading, and you don't have to listen to my mistakes in the verses. So text 120. We'll just read the first one. Nachite nachite prabhura haila bhavat bhavantara hasta tuli shloka pade kari uchai stvara swara. Translation. While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing, his ecstasy changed. Raising his two arms, he began to recite the following verse in a loud voice. Translation. That very personality who stole away my heart during my youth is now again my master. These are the same moonlit nights of the month of Chaitra. The same fragrance of Malati flowers is there, and the same sweet breezes are blowing from the Kadamba forest. In our intimate relationship, I am also the same lover. Yet still my mind is not happy here. I am eager to go back to that place on the bank of the Reva under the Vetasi tree. That is my desire. Purport. This verse appears in the Padyavali by Srila Rupa Goswami. Translation. This verse was recited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again and again, but for Srup Damodar, no one could understand its meaning. Translation. I have already explained this verse. Now I shall simply describe it in brief. actually, yesterday, there's a one line purport here by Srila Prabhupada. In this connection, see Madhyalila chapter 1, verses 53, 77 to 80, and 82-84. Yesterday we were reading, just on a side note, the comments of Srila Prabhupada cited the comments of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta from his Anubhasya on this particular pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing and reciting these verses as well. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives some comments on this a particular pastime, and it's so closely related, I was just going to read a short excerpt from one of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings in his comments on this whole pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the carts going to Gundicha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our spiritual great-grandsire, said to a disciple, the Vaishnavas who reside in holy places like Vrindavan and Nabadweep are wrong. I want to perform my deepest devotions at Kurukshetra. Why? Asked the disciple. Do you want to remember the place where Krishna spoke the Gita to Arjuna? No. In the age before the Gita, Kurukshetra was made sacred when the avatar Parashuram filled five lakes with the blood of the warrior caste. This was done to lighten the world's overburdened condition by military might. But I am thinking of Krishna's time before the Gita and the battle between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Krishna resided in palaces of opulent splendor in Dwarka while he reigned as Lord of the world. A great festival took place at Kurukshetra, during which there was an eclipse. All the royal families and powerful heroes assembled to celebrate there. They feasted on only pure foods, fried in ghee, like kachoris. Kurukshetra lies near Vrindavan. Hearing of the festival, Krishna's cowherd family and friends, from Vrindavan took the opportunity to make the journey to Kurukshetra to see Krishna again after a very long time. Krishna met with many thousands of royal dignitaries, military generals, and heads of state, and he made some excuse to get away from the crowd to meet the Brajvasis. His brother Balaram and sister Subhadra were also there, and the three of them had chariots. And Subhadra said, I will go in the first chariot so that they will see me and not think some big generals are arriving. Balaram, you go in the second chariot and Krishna in the third. We will go slowly so the chariots don't raise any dust. Arriving at the Brajvasis' camp, Krishna and Balaram met the residents of Vrindavan, Jasoda, Rohini, Maharaj Nanda, the cowherd boys, and satisfied them all with good wishes and happy memories of when he lived with them. Then Krishna slipped away to an even more secluded grove to meet with his cowherd girlfriends, of whom the most beloved is Radha. Radha and Krishna are as inseparable as the sun and the sun's heat. So the pastime goes on further to describe how Krishna tries to pacify Srimati Radharani, who is heartbroken by years of separation from him. He tries to convince her that he is always with her because he is all-pervasive and is seated in her heart as the super soul. And pastime goes on in their conversation, and it's described how Srimati Radharani rejects Krishna's instructions with affectionate anger. She states, that incompetent creator Brahma, who sprang from your navel, created eyelids that obstruct our vision even for one moment's blinking. You have associated with that Vedanta pundit too long, and now your intelligence seems to have been contaminated, so you have forgotten us. We are not yogis or sages or scholars of the Vedas. Your presence is in us as fire is in wood. But your amorous glances are like lightning that burns and ignites our hearts. Take off your royal crown, put a peacock feather on your head, abandon that military attitude and return to Vrindavan. Play your flute and dance again. We gopis are very envious of your flute. What austerities did that yogi perform to take birth as an ordinary bamboo tree that gave birth to your flute? Your lips are meant for us. Come back to Govardhan Hill. By the touch of your lotus feet, Govardhan trembled, and all the trees and flowers, bushes shook. Govardhan shed tears of ecstasy, and the screams and the streams on his body carried flowers to us to make your garlands. Krishna responds to all of this wonderful these wonderful words of Srimati Radharani by saying, Krishna now knows that his own energy has expanded beyond his own conception, and he is unable to reciprocate. I, the Lord of the mind and yoga, gave the gopis the nectar of knowledge, but it could not extinguish the blazing fire of their love. Day and night I think of you. I will return after performing a few more responsibilities. Srila Bhaktivinoda comments, the energy has surpassed the energetic, the rock. It cannot lift. The transcendence has transcended itself. To respond to this, Krishna must taste the ecstasy of Mahabhava. And for that reason, he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It goes on further to explain how every year Lord Chaitanya would celebrate the chariot festival in Jagannath Puri, which we're now in the midst of reading. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is observing this wonderful festival in Jagannath Puri. His golden form surrounded by thousands of devotees. He led them all in divine chanting and dancing as they joined him in pulling the three enormous chariots of Subhadra, Balaram, and Jagannath. And it goes on to describe this whole pastime of the chariots moving along and again stopping at some point, in which we touched upon yesterday. But there's one very nice little piece here that talks about the deity forms of Jagannath Swami. Once Rohini, the mother of Balaram, described the Braj pastimes to the queens in Dwarka. She told them to shut all the doors because these tales are very confidential, and if Krishna hears them, he may run away to Vrindavan. Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra listened outside the door, side by side. Hearing about Braj, they melted in ecstasy. Their arms and legs sank into their torsos, and their faces swelled into wide open smiles. That is the form of the Jagannath deity worship now in this Daru Brahma form. So the description by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues. At one point, the chariot stopped. Even the royal elephants could not move them. To Lord Chaitanya's eyes, this represented the moment when Krishna expressed to Radha his sorrow for having to delay his return to Vrindavan. Then Mahaprabhu began to sing a verse from a mundane romantic song, which we just got through reciting. That tells of a lover pleading to her beloved to return to the garden where they first met. This astounded and bewildered all the devotees except for two confidential associates, Srupa Dhammadhara and Rupa Goswami, who understood that Mahaprabhu was tasting the mood of Sri Radha. Rupa Goswami later rewrote the mundane song, knowing it to have the same sentiment as the prayer of Radha to Krishna when they'd met at Kurukshetra 5,000 years before. So we're now continuing with that description. Translation. Formerly, all the gopis of Vrindavan were very pleased when they met with Krishna in the holy place of Kurukshetra. Similarly, after seeing Lord Jagannath, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu awoke with the ecstasy of the gopis. Being absorbed in this ecstasy, he asked Srupa Dhammadhara to sing the refrain. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke thus to Lord Jagannath, "You are the same Krishna and I am the same Radharani. We are meeting again in the same way that we met in the beginning of our lives. Although we are both the same, my mind is still attracted to Vrindavan Dham. I wish that you will please again appear with your lotus feet in Vrindavan. Kurukshetra is crowded with people. There are elephants and horses and the rattling of chariots. In Vrindavan, however, there are flower gardens and the humming of the bees and chirping of the birds can be heard. Here at Kurukshetra, you are dressed like a royal prince, accompanied by great warriors. But in Vrindavan, you appear just like an ordinary cowherd boy, accompanied only by your beautiful flute. Here, there is not even a drop of the ocean of transcendental happiness that I enjoyed with you in Vrindavan. I therefore request you to come to Vrindavan and enjoy pastimes with me. If you do so, my ambition will be fulfilled. I have already described in brief Srimati Radharani's statement from Srimad Bhagavatam. In that ecstatic mood, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited many other verses, but people in general cannot understand their meaning. The meaning of those verses was known by Srirupa Damodar, but he did not reveal it. However, Sri Rupa Goswami has broadcast the meaning. While dancing, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again began to recite that verse, which he tasted in the association of Srirupa Damodar Goswami. That verse is as follows. The gopi spoke thus, "Dear Lord, whose navel is just like a lotus flower, your lotus feet are the only shelter for those who have fallen into the deep well of material existence. Your feet are worshipped and meditated upon by great mystic yogis and highly learned philosophers. We wish that these lotus feet may also be awakened within our hearts, although we are only ordinary persons engaged in household affairs." Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam. The gopis were never interested in karma yoga, jnana yoga, or dhyana yoga. They were simply interested in bhakti yoga. Unless they were forced, they never liked to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. Rather, they preferred to take the lotus feet of the Lord and place them on their breasts. Sometimes they regretted that their breasts were so hard, fearing that Krishna might not be very pleased to keep his soft lotus feet there. When those lotus feet were pricked by the grains of sand in the Vrindavan pasturing ground, the gopis were pained and began to cry. The gopis wanted to keep Krishna at home always, and in this way their minds were absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Such pure Krishna consciousness can arise only in Vrindavan. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to explain his own mind, which was saturated in the ecstasy of the gopis. So, just a quick comment. We can understand here that this is the mood of the devotees. The devotees are not interested in karma, jnana, or dhyana, but we're simply interested in engaging in pure bhakti. Jnana karma dinavritam anukulina krishnanu shilanam bhakti rutama. Bhakti yoga means to be freed from the desire for karma, jnana, but simply interested in rendering whatever service one is capable of rendering. Here, we're reading how the gopis were just simply cowherd girls, and what do you do in a little village? What can you offer? But they were offering their whole being in whatever way Krishna wanted to engage them. So this is the proper mentality of one engaging in the process of bhakti, that whatever Krishna wants to, or however Krishna wants to engage us in his devotional service, we're very enthusiastic to do that. Sometimes there's comments that Srila Prabhupada or some persons may have the audacity to say that Srila Prabhupada never presented the higher, more advanced or esoteric understandings of
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna Lila, but when we're reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita here, there's no doubt that Srila Prabhupada was also immersed in these pastimes, that he was giving the most dull-headed persons this great gift. Today also being the incorporation of ISKCON, I wanted to read one very quick little piece from Lilamrita to make this point or support this point. Srila Prabhupada had to deal with all sorts of characters in spreading Krishna consciousness and establishing Krishna consciousness. And some of them were the craziest of characters. There's a very nice description here of how Srila Prabhupada, when he was still in the 22nd Avenue and just beginning to break ground in establishing the society and his preaching mission, there's a very nice exchange between Srila Prabhupada and some of the guests that would come. So we can just appreciate, when we're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Prabhupada was at, understanding this, and then you compare it to the persons that he's having to deal with, and even those persons have the gall to question a Prabhupada's position. I just have to read this. It was just so hilarious. Prabhupada was in the middle of a discourse, lecturing, and out of the blue, a young man in the audience seems unable to contain himself and began making his own incoherent speech. Prabhupada, no, you cannot disturb just now. The man standing up, now wait a minute, man. A quarrel began between him and others, trying to quiet him. Prabhupada, no, not just now. You cannot ask just now. The man, well, I'm trying to talk. Prabhupada, no, just now you cannot ask. Man, but wait a minute, man. Wait. Prabhupada, why do you interfere just now? We have a regular question time. Then others in the audience they also chime in. And they in support of this fella, and saying that, yeah, let him talk. And the man's supporters defend his right to speak, while others try to silence him. A second man says, I have just one question, please. How long is an individual allowed or expected to stay on without any type of thought? How long? Prabhupada, I'm not finished. We'll give question time after finishing the talk. The parties go on quarreling. All right. I'm very glad you are curious. Please wait. Have some patience, because we have not finished. As soon as we finish, after 5 minutes, I will attend to your question. Then after 5 minutes, Prabhupada continues speaking. Then after 5 minutes, Prabhupada says, all right. The gentleman is impatient. We shall stop here. Now, what is your question? The man. Practically, we tend to place emphasis on those we identify with the fact itself. Listen to this. See if you can figure this out, because I couldn't understand what this guy was saying. Many people are meant to explain the why-fors and wherefores of the metaphysical truth. That I think, therefore I am. Prabhupada, what is your particular question? Man, I have no answer to that question. But that I attempt, I live, I breathe. Prabhupada, yes. Man, so ability. Tell me why I have nothing to do with it. May I understand the wherefores and where's? Prabhupada, that's all right. Man, I have difficulty in you. I have difficulty in saying, Prabhupada, as long as we are in this material world, there are many problems. Man, many problems. It is not many problems. This is the greatest fact I have. I know. Prabhupada, yes? I also know that the whys and wherefores of my particular. Prabhupada, yes? I didn't come here, but let me explain my position. This isn't necessarily. I feel I must. I think the difference is to learn. You'll find it innumerable times by the same token. Maybe we are able to reconcile the fact of individual being for a long time to find out why. Prabhupada, turning to one of his boys, Roy, can you answer his question? This is a general question. You can answer yes. And then Prabhupada finishes dealing with this and goes on to begin chanting and finishes up the evening. So when you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita and what Srila Prabhupada is giving here is so highly advanced that very few, as Prabhupada points out here, very few, Surup Damodar and Rupa Goswami, could understand. All others were bewildered. And yet Prabhupada was so kind as to still make it available. Translation. Speaking in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "For those people, the mind and heart are one. But because my mind is never separated from Vrindavan, I consider my mind and Vrindavan to be one. My mind is already Vrindavan. And since you like Vrindavan, will you please place your lotus feet there? I would deem that your full mercy." Purport. Only when the mind is free from designations, can one desire the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind must have some occupation. If a person is to be free of material things, his mind cannot be vacant. There must be subject matters for thinking, feeling, and willing. Unless one's mind is filled with thoughts of Krishna, feeling for Krishna, and a desire to serve Krishna, the mind will be filled with material activities. Those who have given up all material activities and have ceased thinking of them should always retain the ambition to think of Krishna. Without Krishna, one cannot live, just as a person cannot live without some enjoyment for his mind. I was listening to a very nice lecture the other day, and Srila Prabhupada was commenting on this very same point about engaging in devotional service and engaging the mind and senses. And Prabhupada said that the best way to control the mind, the best way, is to engage it in thinking and how to spread Krishna consciousness. Because it's not a mechanical thing that I'll eat only so much, or that I'll sleep only so much, I'll only look this way, I won't look right or left, or some other exercise. But it's all about engaging it in positive activity. And that positive activity means taxing our brains in trying to figure out how to spread Krishna consciousness.
in one form or another, whether it's a prasadam distribution. Oh, Prabhupada is the best example, of course. Prabhupada created this, the various activities that are there within the ISKCON society, whether it's prasadam distribution or book distribution or harinam or festivals, as we're coming upon this wonderful Rath Yatra festival. All of these wonderful gifts were given by Srila Prabhupada because not only was he showing how by personal example we should tax our brains in figuring out how to spread Krishna consciousness, but also engaging others in that same mentality. Just as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was always absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness in one way or another, Srila Prabhupada also imbibed that same mood of wanting to spread Krishna consciousness in so many wonderful ways. So we also have to tax our brains in figuring out how to make Krishna consciousness attractive to the conditioned souls. And again, that is the best way of controlling the mind. Otherwise, because as Prabhupada points out here, without Krishna, one cannot live, just as a person cannot live without some enjoyment for his mind. The mind is always looking for some opportunity. I need to do this or I need to do that. Every moment is it's flickering here and there. But again, if we can somehow or other focus it on devotional activities, which are so attractive, they're attractive in every way. People are attracted. They're looking for it. They just don't know what they're looking for. That's the point. And if we can make it available in one form or another, then there's all success. So I think I'm going to finish here, and I just wanted to read one little quick thing out of the Lilamrita about the incorporating of ISKCON. Are there any questions or comments thus far? So, again, Srila Prabhupada was at 26 Second Avenue and had a few followers, and at this point decided that he should incorporate his society. And we'll start off with that very point that Srila Prabhupada is making here. We shall call our society ISKCON. Prabhupada had laughed playfully when he first coined the acronym. He had initiated the legal work of incorporation that spring while still living in the Bowery. But even before its legal beginning, he had been talking about his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so it had appeared in letters to India and in the Village Voice. A friend had suggested a title that would sound more familiar to Westerners, International Society for God Consciousness. But Prabhupada had insisted Krishna consciousness. God was a vague term, whereas Krishna was exact and scientific. God consciousness was spiritually weaker, less personal. And if Westerners didn't know that Krishna was God, then the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would tell them by spreading his glories in every town and village. Krishna consciousness was Prabhupada's own rendering of a phrase from Srila Rupa Goswami's Padyavali, written in the 16th century, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita. Quote, to be absorbed in the mellow taste of executing devotional service to Krishna.
End of quote. But to register ISKCON legally as a non-profit tax-exempt religion required money and a lawyer. Carl Jurgens, one of his followers, had already gained some experience in forming religious, political, and social welfare groups. And when he had met Prabhupada on the Bowery, he had agreed to help. He had contacted his lawyer friend, Stephen Goldsmith. Stephen Goldsmith, a young Jewish lawyer, had a wife and two children and an office on Park Avenue. And he goes on to describe how he was fascinated to be able to help an Indian Swami establish a religious corporation. And one evening, having completed all the legal groundwork and being ready to complete the procedures for incorporation, Mr. Goldsmith came to Prabhupada's lecture and kirtan to get signatures from the trustees for the new society. The conversation goes on between Mr. Goldsmith and Srila Prabhupada, and then they begin to read the articles of incorporation, which I think most devotees are familiar with, so we won't read them, but there were different articles stating the seven purposes of ISKCON. Regardless of what ISKCON's charter members thought of the society's purposes, Prabhupada saw them as imminent realities. As Mr. Rubin, the subway conductor who had met Prabhupada on a Manhattan bench beach in 65, had noted, quote, he seemed to know that he would have temples filled up with devotees. There were temples and books, he said. They are existing, they are there, but the time is separating us from them. The first purpose mentioned in the charter was propagation. Preaching was the word Prabhupada often used. For him, preaching had a much broader significance than mere sermonizing. Preaching meant glorious, selfless adventures on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Lord Chaitanya had preached by walking all over southern India and causing thousands of people to chant and dance with him in ecstasy. Lord Krishna had preached the Bhagavad Gita while standing with Arjuna in his chariot on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Lord Buddha had preached, Lord Jesus had preached, and all pure devotees preach. ISKCON's preaching would achieve what the League of Nations and the United Nations had failed to achieve. One important point here is that that Sasrupa Maharaj makes is that preaching meant glorious, selfless adventures on behalf of the Supreme Lord, which is very important because Krishna consciousness is a preaching movement. The ISKCON Society is a preaching movement. And sometimes we have to go on adventures. It's like an adventure, trying to establish a temple or establish a center or establish a program. It's a great adventure. Isn't there one name for Krishna, that the one who performs adventurous activities, is that Urukram? I believe. The performer of adventurous activities. So, Krishna consciousness means a great adventure. And just like Rath Yatra, every year is like a great adventure. You don't know what to expect. It's always something new. Last year it was the deities had a special rasa that they wanted to travel together. Balaram wanted to travel with Lady Subhadra. This year, who knows? Come out and find out. It'll be a great adventure, there's no doubt.
ISKCON preaching would achieve what the League of Nations, and this, I read that, real unity and peace in the world. ISKCON workers would bring peace to a world deeply afflicted by materialism and strife. They would systematically propagate spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the non-sectarian science of God. It was not that a new religion was being born in July 66. Rather, the eternal preaching of Godhead, known as Sankirtan, was being transplanted from east to west. So it goes on to describe some various points, but for lack of time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.